Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, trying to get this show done in time for you for your drive home today, or maybe finishing up your work day. I'll be honest with you, I'm in kind of a foul mood today. I am, and have been since, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes into that second half last night in that ball game. Probably good I didn't record last night, and fired off some texts that maybe I shouldn't have. But, yeah, frustrating night, and I think the reality of the moment is kind of upon us. We're not as good as we expected to be. Now, I didn't expect to beat Florida. I also didn't expect to get blown out by Florida. And I, like many of you, I'm like, you know what, man, we endured such a challenging football season. In all due respect to everybody associated with football, nobody asked for Blake Shapen to get hurt. And I'm not sure how many more games he would have won, but I feel pretty confident that we would have won a couple more. But, you know, hey, it kind of lets you off the hook a little bit, I guess, when things are struggling and your quarterback goes down and you got to play a true freshman. But we endured a 2-10 football season. Looked forward to basketball. We felt like the men would be better than the women. Both of them now are kind of drifting a bit, shall we say. We're going to talk a little bit about both today. But, yeah, disappointed last night. And, again, I guess it's one of those things, too, it just kind of all adds up. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, we narrowly lose to Kentucky. A game we feel like we should have won. Alabama slips out of here with a tight win. And we start thinking, okay, you know, we've got to get that one SEC signature win. And again, I throw the Ole Miss game out at home because it's a rivalry game. Still think we'll slip into the tournament, but man, we have got to win some ball games. And I think the post-game commentary from Chris Jans did not really maybe – I don't know, give us a lot of confidence. You know, I think the coach is as frustrated as we are, and I get that, you know, and he's got more skin in the game than you and I do. But, yeah, there are some things that I want to say about men's basketball. I'm going to talk about the totality of the season. My faith in Chris Jans is not wavering, but I think, and I'm not going to sit here and take responsibility for this and say we did it to ourselves for expecting great things this year. Because I think with the roster and what we had returning, that we felt like, you know, hey, we ought to be able to finish in the top half of this league. We didn't expect maybe to contend or be in the top four or so. And then all of a sudden, Joe Lunardi has us projected as a 2 seed. And we start thinking, hey, it validates our opinion and our expectations. And then things have kind of gone askew. And so I think it's okay to call it for what it is. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think everything's going to be okay because I don't know that. But, yeah, for some reason last night, it just really, really hit me. And I even told some guys on my staff. I said, you know, I'm so incredibly frustrated right now. And listen, I don't cover basketball. Like I don't go to the games and cover. I do go to the games and cheer for Mississippi State. But I don't go and cover And I was proud of my guys last night for getting, you know, some quality stories up rather quickly after the game. Because I can tell you, it's tough writing stories when we lose, especially losing like that. Because, you know, we fought and had the lead at the break. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. But, man, I tell you what, Florida came out ready to go. And, you know, my feeling, we've won every game this year that we led at the half except for that one. And I think you guys probably agree with me. We have been a very good second half team really throughout the Chris Jans era. And I think that says a lot about coaching. You know, we figured out how they're attacking us, how they're defending us. We get into the break and we make some adjustments. And then how many times have you seen us kind of put people in a rearview mirror? Yeah, this year, maybe not so much, you know. And then yesterday was, you know, I'd like to say it's an anomaly, right? Because Florida came out, and Florida's very good. You know, we talked about that in a preview. It's like, I'm not exactly sure what to make of this team. Because sometimes they play really above their heads, and other times they play down their competition. But they looked elite last night. And give Todd Golden a lot of credit. You know, those guys came in here, did what they needed to do. I kept thinking that Pat Adams was going to tee somebody up because neither Golden nor Jans were happy with the officiating there in the first half. I suspect Golden was happier with it in the second half because they got some margin, right? I'm not saying the calls went their way, but when the game gets separated, you know, your level of patience is somewhat tempered because of the fact that things are going your way. But, hey, you give Florida credit, and Mississippi State kind of back to the drawing board. And one of the things that worries me is the collective psyche of this team. You know, what does this mean kind of going forward? You know, and you kind of find out who you are in adversity. And that's not just in sports, it's in life. You know, we talk about that in recovery all the time. Anybody can stay clean and sober when life is getting you what you want. Anybody can maintain a level of commitment to somebody or something when they are receiving the benefits from it. There are some times you just got to hang in there and work through it. That's life. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, adding some spice to your life every chance they get. Bulldog Burger Company, the best place to eat in the Golden Triangle. There's no question about it. You know, kind of expanded the empire down into central Mississippi. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. It's the greatest advice that I can give you. You know, it improves your looks. It does. It's in writing now, too. And they told us to trust the science. You know, it's just like, are you guys familiar with Agent Ratliff from OSHA Cares Diversity Affairs? He goes, yeah, when I write these things down, they become true. Same thing with the spring rolls. They've written that down, so it has become true. It's on the menu. Spring rolls will make you better looking, right? So be sure and check that out. And then get a great quality restaurant quality hamburger that suits your needs. It varies, right? Some days you may feel like jalapeno. Some days you may feel like some pico de gallo. Some days you feel like a fried egg. And you can kind of get all that at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Star Vegas. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo. Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company. The place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, let's take a quick look back at this game. And we'll preview Egg Bowl basketball on Friday's show in its entirety. But we'll kind of look ahead and see kind of where things sit right now with the Bulldogs in the SEC. But, yeah, it wasn't a good night. And that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, if you don't have, like, social media and Gene Spade's message board and things like that, it's easy to get frustrated and kind of feel alone. And there are some people that probably shouldn't post during a game or after a loss, but it all comes from a good place. I had a discussion with a guy earlier this week about that. He goes, you know, some of those people, yeah, we all love Mississippi State. And sometimes we can't articulate our frustration in a healthy way. And so it comes out. And so it all comes from a good place. I want people to understand. I say that on the show all the time, and I don't think people get it. Like, I just don't understand those people. They don't love Mississippi State any less than you do. But we could be in a situation where maybe they have not matured to the point that they can vent that frustration. But they vent that frustration because they have expectations of Mississippi State. They want good things for Mississippi State. So let's all kind of measure out a little grace for each other in times like these, you know? Because, you know, one of the things that I kind of get kind of chuckled about, you know, we have some people that like men's basketball is their favorite sport, right? And I don't think you can begrudge anybody their favorite, right? I mean, like for a while there, we didn't really know how much we love women's basketball until we started competing and winning at an elite level. And again, so many of us kind of root for the logo. You're like, and you find out, hey, women's basketball is actually pretty fun. Yeah. And so everybody has their own favorites. And one of the things that I don't like to see is like the call out, right? It's one thing for me to say, okay, my name is Steve. And then somebody goes out there and says, well, on your birth certificate, it says Steven. So you're incorrect. Well, I guess technically that's true. But, you know, Steve, of course, is short for Steven, even though I had the PH on the birth certificate. And people want to go, you know, throw it. That's an absurd comparison in some respects. People want to throw things in your face. I don't think anybody should be called on the carpet for expecting this men's basketball team to do well. And I have seen some of that. And I've heard even more of that. And then sometimes people don't say anything because they're like, you know what, we're all in the same boat, right? And that's kind of how I feel too. But I've seen some people who are like, well, you know, maybe our basketball experts don't know as much as they think. Guys, the most difficult thing to do in life is to project and predict future human performance. You just never know. You never know what people are going through. Simple as that. They're not just like players on a court. They're just there for our amusement. You know, they're living life just like the rest of us. And you never know what's going on. Could be a physical situation. Could be an emotional situation. You never know what's going on in somebody's family. And so it's so difficult to project how people are going to react over the totality of a season. So no, there's no need to go call out our basketball experts and say, those guys don't know anything. You know, they may not. But again, it comes from a good place. You know, I don't think anybody at any point should ever be criticized for having faith in Mississippi State. That's not to say that we always get the return on investment that we expect, but I'm never, ever going to be critical of anybody that says, you know what, hey, I expect great things this year. We've got a great team, a great roster, a great coaching staff. We're ready to take the next step. Even if it didn't work out, I still appreciate the optimism and loyalty. Now, I don't think anybody was overly optimistic about men's football, rare exceptions on message boards and things like that. But I think most people kind of said, you know, hey, we're going to be lucky to get to six. And then without Blake Shapen, it kind of removed that whole possibility. And we kind of endured football season rather than enjoyed it. But I think our fans, for the most part, had a very, very realistic view of football. And I'm not going to say that we didn't have an overly optimistic view of basketball. I think we felt, based on the pieces coming in and coming back, that we should be a really good team and finish in the top half of this league. And we still can, but we're going to have to pick it up. Bulldogs now 17-7 overall, 5-6 in conference play. That's the number that kind of sticks in the craw a little bit, right? And again, I go back to if we're being honestly objective, you know, you would have hoped to have won at Butler, but hey, that's easier said than done. And I think if we're just looking at this from maybe 30,000 feet, you say, you know what, hey, we probably should have beat Missouri, even though Missouri's playing well right now. But outside of that, beginning of the year, when you begin to see this whole thing going together with Florida, when you begin to see them really begin to come and gel as a team, you probably said, you know what, it's going to be a tough out for us. And it was. It was tougher than we expected. And, you know, we're not in a great place, but we're not in a bad place. I think it's important to understand a good night's rest can kind of change your viewpoint on that. But Bulldogs now 8-4 at home. And that's one of the things that we have done, you know, really for the last several years, has done a pretty good job protecting the home court. But, again, you know, the quality of competition in the hump this year in conference play has been elite. A lot of people have said this is the best year ever in the history of the Southeastern Conference. You know, my hope is if that's truly the case, then we should have, you know, a handful of teams in the Elite Eight. If we go out there and all get bounced, half the teams in the league get bounced the first weekend of the tournament, then we can look back and say, you know what, it was just one of those things where the SEC kind of cannibalized itself. Maybe they weren't so great after all. Florida advances to 21-3 and 8-3 in Southeastern Conference play. And again, Bulldogs, a one-point lead at the break. And I said, you know what? Hey, we'll come back here. This is probably going to be one of those games that goes down to the final minute, like we saw with Kentucky and Alabama, and maybe we'll find a way to pull this thing out. That's how I felt. I'm sure many of you probably felt the same way, but you really felt like when you looked up at half, we're only up one. It felt like because of how well we had played at times, we should be up more. We gave up some baskets in transition early because Florida's length and athleticism did hurt us last night, but you just kind of felt like we could have played a little bit better, and you felt like maybe at halftime we kind of figured out. But instead, we get outscored by 14 in the second half. And again, that 17-0 run, wasn't it 17? 17-0 run to start the second half really just kind of put us in the rearview mirror. And a lot of surrender cobras during the broadcast last night too. Bulldogs get 19 out of Josh Hubbard. We kind of got him figured out, but so is everybody else in that respect too, right? They're not just going to let Josh just, you know, kick and shoot. 5 of 15 from the floor, got to the line some. I thought that the game was very physical for both teams, and I don't know last night if that favored us. We are a very physical team. I think they are a more talented team, and we were kind of playing their game, and they had a little more juice. But 5 of 7 from the line, missed a couple of bunnies back-to-back. And then 19 points. Claudio Harris, you know, we got to get him going again. Just 18 minutes of action. He had the one big three that really, you know, kind of made a difference in a run there. But outside of that, that's it. The only made basket for him on the night. 6 points. The rest of his points come at the line. Cam Matthews, they're just determined not to let us get anything going with Cam on the offense. And you don't run a ton of offense through him, but he has really been a non-factor on the offensive end outside of doing the grunt work that he does so well at, you know, setting picks and, you know, getting rebounds and playing good defense. But 7 rebounds for him, 5 points. Michael Nwoko, again, I didn't think we got shoved around by their bigs, but we just didn't get a lot of production outside of Keyshawn Murphy. Nwoko, 5 points in 19 minutes of action, pulled down 6 boards. R.J. Melendez didn't look to be 100% to me, you know, and I wonder about that a little bit. You know, he's a tough kid and one of my favorite players on the team, but just 3 points for him, made one basket and made one free throw. We can't have 4 of our 5 starters scoring in single digits and expect to beat anybody. Not going to happen. Keyshawn Murphy comes off the bench, and where would we be without Keyshawn Murphy? I feel like we've sung his praises the entire season long, and rightfully so. He's 8 of 14 for the floor, 18 points, 13 rebounds. I mean, those are SEC Player of the Week type numbers, right? You find a way to win this game, all of a sudden, and you go to Oxford and win, Keyshawn Murphy may be your SEC Player of the Week. Those are huge numbers. And somebody has to pick up the slack in the front court, and it's been Murphy. And again, I remember he went in the portal last year, and thankfully talked him out of it. Where would we be without him? Riley Kugel, 7 points. I mean, just we're not getting enough production from him. Sean Jones had a big three at a very important time in the game. You know, it was kind of a scramble out there, and they get it to him. And again, Sean's just another one of those guys, a good defender, just kind of an opportunistic scorer, not a guy you're going to run a ton of offense through. Delquan Warren had a couple minutes too. But, it wasn't great, you know. We shoot 41% from the field. Actually shot 48%. In the second half. So we shot it better. We just got off 8 less shots. And part of that, too, is just because we kept turning the basketball over.
Warning. The following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated. Forlorn, even. Like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
31% in the second half from 3 points with 5 of 12, 26 for the game. Free throws were a bit better, 13 of 19. But, it wasn't great. I mean, you know, the second half, they just kind of take off and did what they want to do. And so it's frustrating. It is. And, you know, I told a friend last night, and listen, you know, I try to be a very optimistic person. And maybe it's not even an attempt. I think I'm kind of optimistic by nature. My wife may agree, but may disagree, pardon me. I'm just so tired of being irrelevant. You know what I mean? It's like we were just another game on a schedule in football. And now the women are in the bottom half of the league. Alabama came in here and did whatever they wanted to do. And now the top teams in this conference have kind of shown us, you know what, Mississippi State, you guys may have made some steps in the right direction, but you're still not at our level. And that's one of the things that I think about. A friend of mine said, you know, Steve, there's still a difference in talent. And I understand that. But we're 3 years into this thing, and we spent a boatload of NIL money last year to kind of load up for this year. It's like, hey, you know, we got into the play-in game 2 years ago. We didn't win. We made the tournament. We weren't expected to make the tournament. We did. Last year, we were expected to make the tournament. We get beat in the first round. It's like, hey, we're there. We're maybe a couple of pieces away from really being a serious thing. And I'm going to be honest with you, and I know some people won't like this. I just don't know if there's room in this lane for us long term. Now, I go back and look at, you know, look at the crowd last night. What the crowd looked like. Top 25 matchup. And yes, I understand there was some weather. But top 25 matchup. And you would think that the Humphrey Coliseum would be packed to the rafters with Bulldogs. Those that were there were into the game until there wasn't a game. But it is clear that we are very fair-weathered when it comes to men's basketball. We are front-runners when it comes to men's basketball as a fan base. We'll go when we think we're going to win. And so last night, you know, we hadn't played well as of late. Really good Florida team coming in. You get a couple of raindrops in the air, and you're like, I'm going to stay home and watch. I'm not going to drive in the rain and watch us lose. That sentiment was prevalent. I had about a half dozen people try to give me lower-level tickets last night. A lot of people just decided not to go. And it's kind of like I ask about everything else. You know, what kind of program do we want to have? You know, what message are we sending to our coach and our future recruits when we don't come to games? You know, and I'm not trying to guilt anybody into that because I don't always go either. Again, I got people to cover. But I do enjoy going to the games, and I don't enjoy losing either. Matter of fact, I hate losing more than I love winning. I hate it. And not just with Mississippi State, you know, but in life or anything else. I hate losing. I understand losing is part of competition, but the biggest lesson I've ever learned for losing is I don't want to do it again. I hate losing. And especially when, like, you know, people are like, you know, hey, if we just did this, if we just gave this amount of money and we just did this and we did more of this and the fans did that, we would win big. And then we do all that and then we don't. And it sucks, man. It sucks. I hate it. I hate it. And I know you do too. And I still love my Bulldogs and I always will. I'll be a Mississippi State guy to the day that I die. And I'm always going to hope for big things, and I always feel like Bully will find a way to figure it out. And even sometimes he doesn't. But, hey, it's no walk in the park for us down the stretch here. I mean, let's just kind of call it for what it is. You got to go to Ole Miss on Saturday, you know, a game that we won. And, again, I know it went to overtime, but let's be honest about that. You know, we kind of let them back in the game, give them credit for making some big shots. But Ole Miss played well. And, again, I go back to a lot of our people were like, hey, that, you know, why is Ole Miss ranked in the top 25 and we're not? Well, I think maybe they knew some things maybe perhaps we didn't. But yeah, Ole Miss playing well, ranked number 19 in the country. And you got A&M coming in. That's a must win. I think we can all see it for what it is. And you got to go to Oklahoma. It's tough to win on the SEC road. Then you got to go to Tuscaloosa. And you know how great Alabama is. LSU's coming in here. You feel like that should be a dub. Texas is coming in. That'll be a toss-up. You got to go to Arkansas. Bud Walton has been a house of horrors at times, even though we've had some success here recently. But, you know, Cal Perry and those guys kind of figuring some things out. You know, so getting them late may not be a lot of fun. And so, again, you start running through the final numbers here. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games left. And 4 of those are on the road. And so when you start thinking about what we need to do to make the tournament, and where you're 5 and 6 right now, right? So it's got an 18-game schedule. And so who at this point do you expect to beat? You know, I would say LSU, you know, feel good about that. Maybe we can get Texas, you know. But it's, do we get in at 7-11? Unless if we go 7-11 and then get knocked out of the SEC tournament, I think we're an NIT. I know what other people will say, but when you begin, we talk about the last 10, look at the totality of the season and things like that, you know, in conference play. If you have a losing record in conference, you've got to have some other things up there to kind of prop up the resume. And yes, this is a very competitive conference, and you could have as many as 12 teams in a tournament. And as of now, I still think we're one of them based on the snapshot of the resume today. As bad as last night stings, it doesn't wash away everything else we've done this year. But it's not going to be easy. I mean, and you know, I think, again, Chad Christians is a very much a hard-nosed coach. But we've got to figure out some things offensively. And we'll just call for what it is. We got out-coached in the second half. We got absolutely out-coached in the second half. Florida came out there and absolutely overwhelmed us with their half-court adjustments, and we looked like we were unprepared to play in the second half. And it is absolutely okay to say that. I can still like Chris Jans and still enjoy him being our coach and then be critical of you know, how we handled a certain situation. You know, not a sheep. But, you know, when you begin to think about, you know, kind of what's left for us in this regular season, it is one of those things you begin to think about, you know, how worried should we be? I think it's okay to be concerned. I don't think it's time to panic. And again, Florida is tied for technically second place in the league. They're 8-3, just 2 games behind Alabama and Auburn. And so Florida's a great team. Texas A&M, an 8-3 team, 19-5 overall. We're going to see them in Humphrey Coliseum. Are they a great team? They're a really good team. Are they a better team than Mississippi State? We're going to find out. Ole Miss, 7-4. We got to go there. They've been good at home. Most everybody in this league is. Then you get Texas. You know, Texas, a 4-8 Texas team, 15-10 overall. Oklahoma, 3-7, 16-7. You got to go there. You know, Arkansas's 3-7, 14-9. And so, again, you look down the stretch here and you start thinking, okay, what do we need to do to get close to 500? And that's going to be tough. I think if I had to project it today, we're probably 8-10. Probably 8-10. And is that enough to get you in the tournament? I think you probably need to go to Nashville and win a game, and probably 2. Now, and here's the thing, too, that I defended our, quote, basketball experts earlier. One of the things that we're not going to do is we're not going to get out here and get in by the skin of our teeth and then you make declarations about how you were right. Because that's not how we expected this season to go. Nobody expected us, with maybe rare exception, nobody expected us, when we got into SEC play, to think we were going to have to go to Nashville and win a game or two to make the tournament. I think we can all agree that we expected to be in and that we were just going to be playing for positioning in the SEC tournament, and we weren't having to sweat it out. But we're in a position right now where I, again, think we're on the right side of things. I don't even think we're on the bubble. But last night was a deflating loss. It'd be one thing if we lost by five, and some people would say I'd rather lose by 30 than by five, right? I want to have to endure that again. The losses all count the same. In some respects, that's correct. But the reality of it is we have a losing record. We're just now, you know, a handful of games left to play, and we've got to find a way to pick some teams off. And so, again, you go back and, we get the benefit of the schedule lighting up a little bit once we get through A&M. But the thing that what I worry about, again, you look at this thing as as a 5-6 SEC team, and not just the psyche of the team, but of the fan base. What happens if you lose in Oxford on Saturday? All right, you and I both know the rivalry losses sting more and the wins last longer. But let's say you lose that one and you come home on Tuesday to a half-filled Humphrey Coliseum and you lose to A&M. Now all of a sudden that's, you know, three games in a row, and then is it five of the last six that you've lost? Yeah, and then you get to go to Oklahoma. That should be a winnable game. Should be. And then you got to go to Alabama. Would anybody pick us to beat Alabama? I'd say no. And let's say you get OSU and you get Texas, and I'm not willing, to count Arkansas. That'd be a huge win for us. But, again, as I see it today, I think we'll get Oklahoma on the road, LSU at home, and Texas at home. And that gets you to 8. And you finish 8-10. Is that enough? I don't think so. But I think it could be. But, so we're not going to just say, hey, we made a tournament 3 years in a row, just like I said. No, it won't be just like you said. But my whole attitude is just get me to the dance, and then we'll figure it out. I'm not going to be happy just making the tournament. I think this team is more talented than that, and I think also, too, we just need to experience a little bit of success. And I think that's the real challenge of the coaching staff right now is like, hey, we've endured a very difficult stretch in the schedule. Let's kind of lock in and focus on these last seven games, and then we'll see what things look like before we go to Nashville. But, yes, as of now, we're still a tournament team. Yes. Well, I would be remiss if I did not also point out, too, that yesterday, February 11th, was the one-year anniversary of the opening of our True Rest Float Spa in Starkville. It has been amazing. Things have gone well. I always do a little bit better. But, I'm real proud of my wife. We built that thing up from nothing, and it's become a regular part of so many people's everyday lives. A lot of people getting in there trying to get that last-minute Valentine's Day gift. It's true. Two floats for $99. They're regularly $89. We're giving you two for $99. And you got up to 6 months to use it, if memory serves me correct. You can call Dana to get all the details, 662-268-7601. That's the first number I've committed to memory in 20 years. But, you can check that out. And it's a great Valentine's Day gift. And it can be a date night deal. You can both come. Or you can let her have both, or you can let him have both. It makes no difference to us, but it's a great experience. It's something that, for me, has changed my life and done so much for my anxiety. And if you're a person that suffers with chronic pain, perhaps chronic anxiety, we may be able to help you get a little bit of relief. But even if you don't suffer with those things, maybe just, life is life, and sometimes you need a break and need some time to yourself, we can help you with that too. Again, 662-268-7601. Last-minute gift ideas, because you've been thinking, what do I need to get her? What do I need to get him that is unique? This is it. This is it. Two floats for $99. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. And no, I don't have his number committed to memory because I'm so reliant on the phone. Remember when we were kids? We didn't need a phone book. Right? And we didn't even need to go check. We kept write everybody's numbers down, but we dialed them so much from memory, we just remembered. It's true. I still remember the numbers of several of my friends growing up. I won't repeat them because I don't know if they're still got family there. I don't want you charlatans calling them, trying to dig up dirt on me. But Blair's phone number is 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. If you're looking for your home, and I don't mean the place you live, I mean the place you plant roots. You're looking for a place to build some generational wealth, to have a place that is your own, whether you're building it or buying it, Blair can help you with it. 24 years of experience in the mortgage industry, bulldog through and through, no question about it. He rides the wave of emotion just like you do. I can tell you he was disappointed with the Florida loss last night too. We spoke about it. Blair's my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler with Priority One Mortgage. Close at Blair.com. Okay, so we're going to piggyback off our Monday list. We had some fun with this one, too. Got a lot of good feedback on the Monday list about, you know, the 70s live acts. I did have somebody hit me up, too, and said that the Humble Pie, there's a couple really good Humble Pie live performances on YouTube. I plan to check those out tomorrow. 30 days in the hole, baby. Yeah, you know it. All right, so we're going to do 80s rock today, and it's going to be, listen, it's 80s rock, okay? So there's a lot of Hairspray, there's some Maybelline, and there's also some good bass guitar, a lot of showmanship, but top 80s rock live performances, this mainly hair metal, mainly, not all hair metal, but mainly hair metal, kind of the bands that defined an era, and many of them still outperforming and selling out arenas all over the world. Well, some of your favorites are gotten their hair cut and selling insurance now. But here we go. Number 10, and I changed this one up a little bit. A lot of you guys would have gone with the traditional hits here, okay? A lot of hits, songs you know. This is one maybe you're not quite as familiar with, and there's a story behind this one. You know, I'm not a big Poison fan, but the most listened to top 10 list in the history of the top 10 list on this show is the Poison list. And so there's a bit of irony in that. I'm not a big Poison fan. And part of that, too, is because like there were so many. It was kind of like they, and you guys are going to get offended, but I'm going to say it anyway. Poison was kind of the Taylor Swift of the 80s metal run. Some people were like, oh, Steve, I can't believe you'd say it. It's true, right? And you had all these 10, 11-year-old girls that were into it with their Ricky Rocket pins on their denim jackets. And, you know, they had four girls, and they all had their own favorites and the little Poison listening parties and things like that. It's true. But you know what? Bret Michaels and those guys made a good run. A lot of people still remember them. And, of course, Nothing But a Good Time is probably the quintessential song of the 80s, right? So I give them some credit. I've met Bret Michaels. Super nice guy. Super. But it's not really my thing. And part of it is because CeCe DeVille can't play the guitar. Now, that understood, I thought one of the best riffs that CeCe ever came up with was Love on the Rocks. That is from the Open Up and Say Ah album. And what you may not know is that that album was originally supposed to be entitled Swallow This. And then some people out there with the PMRC and, you know, people, record companies thought, hey, that's a little bit too overt. It's a little bit too suggestive. So, no, it can't be Swallow This. So they kept the regular art on the album. You know, that crazy long tongue on that girl that looked like, something from The Walking Dead. And they just changed it to Open Up and Say Ah. When Poison put their live album together, they kind of got the last laugh, and they entitled it Swallow This Live. So there you go. But Love on the Rocks, I think, is a cool track. And if you listen in the lyrics, he references that. If you want to taste my love, then swallow this. Yeah, that's where that comes from. All right, number 9, and this is one of my favorite albums of all time. One of the reasons this song is not higher is because they did do some studio dubs, and everybody does that nowadays. But there were some backing tracks required to kind of pull off the Operation Mindcrime tour. And so many of you were with me in Jackson, Mississippi, when they had the Queensryche show with Suicidal Tendencies. It was a moment that most of us will never forget. I don't know that we had ever seen a show quite like that one, quite as elaborate. And I don't just mean, you know, flames and things like that. They had the video screens, and there was all this, like, three-dimensional stuff. And 1 minute, Jeff Tate is on the stage, and the next thing you know, he's in the screen. It's a lot to it. It was quite the production. And so they went out and recorded all this. And, of course, Mindcrime is the biggest album ever for Queensryche. A lot of great stuff. But they went out and released a live album called Operation Live Crime. And there is also the video Operation Video Crime, which you can watch. Go watch it all together in its entirety, and it's worth the trouble. But we went with Eyes of a Stranger here. And again, I love this track. I love this tour. I love this album. But because of the fact it was not quite all live. Does that make sense? So there was some studio fill-in, some backing tracks, and that was back before it was cool. Nowadays, everybody uses backing tracks. Not very many people actually sing and play. All right, number 8. This should probably be a little bit higher on the list. When I first wrote all this stuff down, I wasn't sure where Guns was going to fit. But, Axl hasn't always been the best live. A great showman, not necessarily a great singer live. Incredible in the studio, a lot of character in his voice. But I think the best live version off the Guns N' Roses live era 87 to 93 album was Night Train. Absolutely love it. Absolutely love that live version. And it starts out, you know, they're introducing the band. You wanted the best. Well, they couldn't make it. So here's what you're left with. You know, super cool. But yeah, that Guns N' Roses live era album, if you're unfamiliar with it, it's worth listening to if you're a Guns fan. You know, of course, I go back to GNR Lies. You know, Reckless Life was really good off that one. Almost went that direction, but I wanted to turn you guys on to that live era 87-93 album if you were unfamiliar. Number 7, some of you would probably have this one higher. Here's part of this. Some of my favorite live versions of this track are not available on Spotify. The one that is, it's just pretty good. It's not great. It's pretty good. I think the best live version is probably just when Richie and John got together at the Video Music Awards and sang Wanted Dead or Alive, just the two of them. So, yeah, it's Bon Jovi's Wanted Dead or Alive from the One Wild Night live album. I think One Wild Night was like the studio single that they released kind of as the hit to kind of pull that album forward. Number 6. I love this, even though it was recorded a little bit after the heyday. Not too far removed, though. But for those of you that were in Jackson, Mississippi with us, when we saw Warrant, Trickster, and Firehouse, you know, the year before they came through, Warrant opened for Motley. What a great show that was on a Dr. Feelgood tour. And at that time, Warrant, of course, was riding the success of Down Boys and Heaven and all that. It was great. Great night. And then they came back on the Cherry Pie Tour, and one of you clowns on stage left were throwing things at Joey Allen, and Janie had to stop the show and threatened to kick your you-know-what if you kept throwing things at his guitar player. And then when he got ready to sing House, one of you gave Janie a Marlboro Light cigarette. I remember these things. I don't know why I remember them, but I do. We had a lot of special moments together at Mississippi Gulf Coast Coliseum and the Coliseum there in Jackson. Some of the greatest days of my youth were spent with all of you, nameless, faceless strangers that were just there to enjoy the rock. But we got to hear this song performed live on a major concert venue for the first time. We were the first people to ever hear this, according to Janie. Now, he may have been lying to us, but he said it's the first time we played this song live, and it's Uncle Tom's Cabin. And we heard that both times they came through. We heard it. They said, hey, how about a new song? We couldn't believe it. We got to hear that. And then they came back. And by the time they came back with the Cherry Pie album, it was a huge hit. Uncle Tom's Cabin off of 10 Live. That's your number 6 track today. Number 5, could have gone a lot of different directions here. I'm sure the homie Sam Denton would probably steer me in another direction. But one of the things that I love about all these remastered and re-released albums from our youth is sometimes we get the demo version, we get a live version, we get a remastered version, we get an outtake. There's a lot of content available to kind of get you to buy these albums, and sometimes I do. I did buy the Infestation, if I can get it out, Infestation album, the special edition. It's available on iTunes and Spotify. And it's great. And I've always said that Rat was, Stephen Piercy has the voice with the most character from the genre. Now, this was recorded live, but in like the Westwood One studios as part of a radio event. So there's not a lot of noise with this one, but it's different than the original, and Warren D. Martini absolutely kills it. It's Rat's Way Cool Jr. live, your number five track. Okay, the 4-1, I'm ready to fight with anybody on these because I love these, and I love the presentation on the live albums. So Cinderella was a favorite of mine. I've met Tom Kiefer, super down-to-earth guy, married an Ole Miss girl. Yeah, Savannah, he did. We shouldn't hold that against him, but he did. Married a girl, an Ole Miss girl. Had a chance to meet her, too. But, Cinderella, we had the Night Songs album that everybody loved, and we knew that they were going to be big. Well, then, next thing you know, they come out with album number two, Long Cold Winter. It was much different than the first, but I think it showed some diversity within the band and then Tom Kiefer's talent. The lead single on that album was Gypsy Road. Now, if you are unfamiliar with this live version, there is like an intro that Tom does that really sets up the song super well. This is off the Authorized bootleg album. Cinderella has multiple live albums out there. And Tom can pull it off live, but Tom is a high-tempo, high-energy singer. So sometimes the vocal delivery, maybe it would what you would expect it to be, but it is on here. Again, Gypsy Road from Cinderella, the Authorized bootleg version. All right, number three. You know we had to have some Motley in here. You know, we could have gone with a cover of Jailhouse Rock, but you know my policy on covers. Jailhouse Rock, one recorded live right here tonight. That's on Girls, Girls, Girls. It was great. I enjoyed it. I love Mick Mars' sped-up version of the guitar. The guitar solo is great. But Motley originally was going to name the Theater of Pain album Entertainment or Death. They decided against it because of Vince Neil's accident that killed Razzle Dingley. They just thought that was kind of trading on tragedy. So they saved the name, brought it back later. Motley had a live album called Entertainment or Death. I think the high point on this is their version of Livewire. And Mick is great. Mick is great on this one. So Motley's Livewire from Entertainment or Death, number three. I almost pushed this one to number one. Almost. There are a few vocalists from this era that I think pulled it off live then, and they can still pull it off live now, but we're all getting older, so it's not the same as it won as in 92, right? It's been 30 years. 30 years of screaming for Sebastian Bach. But number two, it's Skid Row's 18 in Life. Now, if you find the Skid Row original album on iTunes or Spotify, or you can buy the hard copy, there is the Skid Row Deluxe Edition. And on there, there are there's some extras, right? And so this is one of them. Skid Row recorded live. And it's absolutely amazing, 18 in Life. There are some vocal moments in this one that will give you chills, at least it do for me. But 18 in Life, what a great track. I remember listening to this on my 18th birthday. I was born at 3:20 in the morning. I hit play at 3:20 because I wanted to hear it on my 18th birthday. Little did I know what the next year held for me. But number one, and this is one that always holds a special part in my heart, this is the when the Great Radio Controversy from Tesla came out, every one of my friends had their own copy. You know how it was back in the day, like I would buy Motley, you'd buy Rat, somebody'd buy Bon Jovi, and we'd all trade, make copies or whatever. Everybody in my friend group wanted this album of their very own. And they wanted to support the band, they wanted their own hard copy. We bought it on cassette, and then when they converted to CDs, we bought it on CDs too. It was incredible. I still listen to this album. Tesla, of course, had a lot of unplugged success, as you guys know. Signs from Five Man Acoustical Jam was a great crossover track for them and introduced them into the mainstream. So they went back later and did a replugged live album, which is super cool. There's a lot of bonus content out there from Tesla. Got a handful of cover albums called Reel to Reel. Got the acoustic stuff. But replugged live, super cool. And I went with Love Song. on this one because I love how Frank Cannon plays the intro. It's so incredibly true to the original. But there's something about the crowd singing along to this one that just kind of resonates with my spirit. I just love it. I've always loved the song. There are times that this song has brought me to tears, even as an adult. You know, and even when I've been completely in love, there are just sometimes, and I can just feel the authenticity in Jeff Keith's voice when he gets to the end of the song and he just sings, "I know," right? And it's like, how many times in life have we been through something and we just want somebody to acknowledge and validate our pain and say, "I understand. I understand." And that's kind of how I read that. I know, you know, I know that you'll find love again someday. I know, you know. And then on the five-man acoustical jam, you know, he puts, you know, shadooby, shadooby. But there's something special about hearing thousands of people singing this song along with one of America's greatest rock bands. And they're not really defined by the 80s genre. Though they toured with many of those bands, they were not a hair metal band. Tesla is just a great American rock and roll band. Still doing things extremely well. Saw them at the Ryman on Valentine's Day a few years ago with the bride. I'd never been to the Ryman. I wanted to go, and I thought, what better way than to see Tesla at the Ryman? And it was great. Jeff comes out there and says, "The ghost of Hank Williams Sr. told me to get my butt back on stage." You know, it was a great night, and appreciate these guys so very much. Matter of fact, I used to have a license plate on my Toyota Camry that said "Hang Tough." And of course, people thought, well, that's New Kids on the Block. No, it's the lead track off the Great Radio Controversy from Tesla. But eventually I had to change it because I got tired of having to explain that. So again, thanks again to Crap Dog for the suggestion this week. We've had a request for one of the biggest bands of our lifetimes for Friday. We have done this before, but we're going to do kind of a remixed version of this because they've released some new material. Man, we've been doing the top 10 list now for 5 years. And so we're going to go back and revisit. I had somebody hit me up and they wanted the list. And Roy said, you know, that's back before I was doing the list. So we're going to freshen the list. And it's going to be a band that you guys know, probably the band of the 90s in many respects. For many of you, a little bit of a teaser. So we're going to come back and do that for you on Friday. But if you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy on Twitter at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. Just hit subscribe. Doesn't cost you anything. I mean, you're already a Spotify subscriber. Just follow the list and it'll auto-populate and we can turn you on to some cool music from today and yesterday. And I'm on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. I'm going to be there at some point this weekend with the change in baseball schedule, and we'll get to that shortly. Those times, I'll probably be there Saturday. I'll let you guys know on Friday's show. If you're going to be in town, would like to get signed copies of The Dude or anything else, we can take care of that for you. But hey, it's not just about buying books there. You can buy books, but you need to get Mississippi State merchandise whenever you can. Might be a little chilly and wet, so stop by Campus Bookmart and outfit yourself in some new Mississippi State merch. If you need gift ideas for that new couple that are getting married or maybe buying a home, a housewarming gift, buy them a little knickknack or some gift things from Campus Bookmart. Support a Starkville business. You love Starkville. Support our businesses. There's not a better Mississippi State mercantile shop, shall we say, then Campus Bookmart. Neatly positioned on the backside of campus. Go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. If you can't make the town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. Okay. Oh, yeah, promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Okay. University has announced that we're going to play two on Friday. First game is at noon. Second game will be 40 minutes thereafter. No game on Saturday, and then 1 p.m. start on Sunday. So if you are a Gene's Page subscriber, you got quite a treat yesterday. I had a one-on-one interview with Manhattan head coach Stephen Rosen, exclusively for GenesPage.com subscribers. That's pretty enough incentive for you to subscribe there just to kind of get caught up. You know, you never know who I'm going to get on the phone. But Yeah, one of the things I wanted to share with you, we'll do a full preview on Friday, but I wanted to kind of share with you the pitching matchups because he shared those with us yesterday. We know who State's going to start, right? Pico on game one, Carson Ligon game two, and that shouldn't impact their throwing programs at all because both of them have been throwing opposite each other on Fridays. So it's not like Carson's going to miss a day of the throwing program and then Stone on Sunday. Now, how it's going to go for Manhattan is game one, they're going to throw Braden Romero. He is a transfer from Gateway Community College out in Arizona. And looking at his numbers, and granted, JUCO hitters are not the best, but you know, the numbers are just okay. And this is going to be their game one starter. He had 14 appearances last year, 12 starts. He goes 4-5 on the year. 72 innings pitched, 66 hits, so a little bit less than a hit per, and you'd expect that for a Division I pitcher playing JUCO. He allowed 57 runs, only 43 of them were earned, 33 walks against 77 strikeouts, so less than 3-1, closer to maybe 2.5-1. But the number that jumps out to me is only one home run allowed. Yeah, the 5.38 ERA is part of it too. But it's the one home run that tells me, even before I see video of this guy pitch, they did a pretty good job of keeping the ball down, right? And again, in any league, if you're less than a hit per, you know, that tells me this is a guy that probably has some natural sink. Not giving up a lot of line drives, and people aren't able to elevate him. And granted, it was JUCO. So he's taking a big step up in competition. You know, playing against an SEC opponent in their home venue and a very hungry team that's kind of pissed off at the way things went last year. Maybe you guys remember that even though we made it to a regional, we feel like that we probably should have advanced and we felt it should have hosted. But Gateway last year was a 29-33 team. So not a great team, you know. But this is one of their better pitchers from that team, and we're going to see him in game one. Now, game two, they plan to throw Brad Grasser out of Chattahoochee Valley near us, right? A 2-1 record last year and a 5.18 ERA, 46 strikeouts, 21 walks, allowed 4 home runs. And again, you can look at the innings pitched here. He was above a hit per. 48.2 innings pitched, allowed 58 hits. And so a guy that's probably going to pitch to contact, doesn't walk a whole lot of people, but the strikeout ratio, you know, again, it's just you know, right at 2-1 against junior college hitters. But he does get some swing and miss. He averaged 8.51 strikeouts per game last year. And again, you know, 19 overall appearances. And all of those were in relief. And so a relief pitcher now going to pitch in a Division I ball game, game two against Mississippi State. Now, their game three starter, a returner, a sophomore, Joseph Duffield, a native of Delran, New Jersey, was part, like Stephen Rosen was the pitching coach last year and kind of the coach in waiting because Dave Miller had already kind of accepted the position to go back to LaSalle. LaSalle canceled baseball along with six other programs in 2021 due to some budgetary constraints, kind of a COVID casualty. They elected to bring it back. They bring Dave Miller back, who spent 2 years at Manhattan. And Miller had some success at LaSalle, but he recommended that Stephen Rosen be the future coach at Manhattan. And Manhattan, you know, has not had a ton of baseball tradition. They've had a dozen losing seasons in a row. But Duffield was the guy last year. They had to kind of force an action a little bit, but, you know, not a ton of appearances last year. You know, a guy that appeared in six games, but only threw 5.1 innings, allowed 9 hits in those 5.1 innings and 14 runs, but only 6 of them earned, 6 walks against 5 strikeouts. Not great, right? He only threw 43 pitches and, again, finished with an 0-3 record and a 10.13 ERA. So that's the pitching that you're going to face this weekend. Two junior college guys making their Division I debut and a sophomore who only threw five innings. So I can't tell you what to expect, but it's not going to be a great pitching staff. They only returned a little bit on offense, too. It's going to be a Manhattan team that's really in rebuild mode. But I was very grateful to Stephen Rosen. He was very gracious with his time and spoke with me for an extended period of time, a former staffer at Alabama. And so he has been to Duty Noble Field, and he says, hey, it's the best venue in the country. We can't wait to get down there. And they have, seven players from 17 states on their roster, you know, and just trying to expand the recruiting footprint a little bit. But new uniforms for them, too. They've got these green pinstripe, pretty cool-looking uniforms. Just say the Bronx on the front. But that's kind of where we sit, you know. That information's already out there about who's pitching. If you read the article, you know. But I wanted to kind of give you some background on those guys. But this is going to be a very interesting weekend. And listen, I don't like to put a lot of pressure on baseball. And there's enough pressure kind of playing for Mississippi State in and of itself. But we have players and coaches that embrace those expectations. And I think it's important, you know, we get off to a good start here. You know, my whole thing is I just want to be 3-0. When we get to the end of the weekend, I don't have to have 3-7 inning games, but I'd love to have them. But it's really a chance for us to play somebody else and have the opportunity to kind of see what we have. But we're not going to learn a lot about our team this year. I mean, this weekend. Just because of quality competition. And all due respect to Manhattan, they're just a team that's kind of finding a sense of itself with kind of a rebuilt roster. But I shared with you guys in an article earlier this week. They did go out and get some guys out of the portal. And it's interesting to me that they go get these guys from the portal and then they're not starting this weekend. What it kind of tells me is, yeah, we want to kind of take our lumps this year and be better for it next year. And so we're going to throw these guys that have a couple of years of eligibility left, and then maybe next year they'll be in a much better situation. Now, Brad Grasser is a guy that in the classroom is a senior. I'm not sure how many years of eligibility he has left. And all three of these guys that are slated to start against us are right-handers. Everybody always worries about that left-hander, right? The crafty left-hander that doesn't throw hard. They do have a guy that I think we'll see at some point this weekend out of Dallas College of Richmond named Jacob Smoot, no relation to Fred Smoot. But, you know, they've got some big-bodied guys. You know, there's a handful of guys here that you look at them and you say, hey, on the hoof, they look pretty good there. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do in their league. But they were not a strong RPI team at all last year. And so, you know, we're playing them not for an RPI climber. We're playing them to kind of get some wins and kind of have an opportunity to play. This is a deal that's been in place for a little while, but there are a lot of connections between Mississippi State and the staff there. You know, Coach Wingo played at South Carolina, you know, so there's the South Carolina connection, you know, with he and Justin Parker, of course. You know, Coach Englert from, the Merowich Mariners or Harewich Mariners of the Cape Cod League. You know, we send a lot of players up there every year. We've had some guys that have played for the Mariners. And so we don't get a chance to play Northeastern teams very often, but it's interesting. Rosen told me they have had one outdoor scrimmage, period, because of the weather, because of snow and ice and things like that. So they have been inside. They have not had a chance to chase fly balls in a real outfield. They have not had the opportunity to field ground balls. And they'll get that opportunity. They're going to come down on Thursday and then play a pair of games on Friday and one on Sunday. So, again, we'll preview them in greater detail along with the SEC weekend on Friday. But I wanted to kind of give you a taste today. And so people always say, well, Steve, what do you expect? Well, I expect a sweep. You know, I do. But, you know, hitting is always ahead of pitching this time of year. You know, and so we may not go out there and put up 20 runs or 15 runs or 10 runs or even 8 runs. You know, baseball is a funny game. I just want to win the games, right? And so you're talking to the bride a little while ago. I was telling her about the schedule change, and she goes, I don't care if we play 2 or 3 on Friday. I'm just ready for the season to begin. and then let's have an opportunity, to get off to a good start. And, we'll look back. You know, we talk about so much of the schedule, right? And I think many of you feel like I do. Like Mississippi State baseball, we understand baseball is a game you never know when you're going to run into a hot pitcher. You never know, right? But, you know, how many times last year, in the beginning of the season, did we give some games away? You know, and I think it's important for us to kind of look back at that just a little bit, because we had some high expectations last year, but we felt like, hey, this Mississippi State team is probably 500 or a little bit better in conference play. If you remember this time last year, we said, hey, we got to get to at least 14 conference wins. We ended up with 17. We felt like, hey, getting to 14 gets us into a regional, is a two somewhere. We ended up with 17, and we were in the hosting discussion. But one of the reasons we didn't host is not because we let a game get away at Florida, or two games, or a game get away to Arkansas. But you go back and you look, that Saturday game against Air Force, right? I mean, how long did that kind of hang in there with us? You know, we win the first game 8-4 and feel great, and then you go out there against Air Force and you just couldn't score. You know, those are the things that just kind of stood out in this ball game. Colby Holcomb got the loss, but if you remember in this ball game, we get down 1-0, and we come right back and tie it, and then we take the lead there in the eighth. And you're like, okay, 2-1, we just want to get out of here with the dub, but instead, you know, we give up a two-run single there in the ninth and ultimately lose the ball game. It wasn't great. And it stuck with us. And, you know, Cal Steven goes out there and throws a three-hitter, 11 Ks, no walks. And then you think, okay, we're good. No. And then Colby Holcomb comes in, three walks, a couple runs. Cole Cheatham, comes in, gets an out for us, and then Brooks Auger comes in and try to close it out, and we're unable to get it done and ultimately lose the ball game. And those are the kinds of things that just kind of stay with you. And it just kind of ruined the whole weekend. You said, well, some people were saying, well, this Air Force team, could be in the tournament. I think we all kind of knew better, I think that's the case. But we opened up that ninth inning walking back-to-back hitters, Colby Holcomb did, and then ultimately, you give up the two-run single. Brooks Auger couldn't close it out for us. And then we come up and strike out, Joe Powell strikes out, Cup strikes out, Larry singles to keep Pope alive, and then Dakota Jordan grounds out the second. We lose the ball game. But it just puts such a damper on the weekend. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just how it felt. And that's the next thing we're playing Austin Peay the next week. We lose two in the midweek. And so we're 2-3 with Georgia Southern coming in, and then we drop a game of Georgia Southern. And there were a lot of people that had really lost faith before we even got to anything significant. You sweep Mount St. Mary's, you beat Southern Miss and Pearl. You sweep Evansville, and people are like, well, it's just Evansville. And then Evansville nearly takes down Tennessee in a super regional. But there was just so much hemming and hawing, as we get into SEC play, because we split down in Biloxi, and you look up and it's like, okay, we get through our non-conference schedule with a 13-5 record. And we should have won every one of those games. Now, that's not a fair expectation, but, we lose a South Alabama game because we couldn't catch a fly ball. We lose one in lights and couldn't get it done. And then, the Georgia Southern, the game against Georgia Southern, Cal just didn't have it. Just one of those days where he just didn't have it. And, we lose to Austin Peay 3-2, and then we blow a ninth-inning lead against Austin Peay. I mean, it's just, there's just so many of these things. We couldn't close out games. And so a lot of people were like, this is going to be just like last year. And instead, we go, LSU comes in here and we take 2 of 3 and we should have swept. And all of a sudden you start feeling a bit better about things. But I think, for the health of this fan base and certainly out in this program, we got to get out of this weekend with three dubs. And I don't care how many style points we have. I need to see three in the win column and zero in the loss column. I think everybody sees it the same way I do. And this is a Manhattan team. Again, hey, brand new team, brand new coaching staff in many respects. And they haven't been able to practice much. And so it means everything to them to come in here and play well. And they're going to come in here with the expectation, you know, like, hey, we want to go in there and win the game. But you get through Manhattan, and then you got to go down to Hattiesburg on Tuesday. And, you know, Southern Miss, you know, those guys don't want to lose to Mississippi State either. You know, they get a chance to get us in their own backyard. And, of course, you know, they're a team that's been, you know, a very quality baseball team for, you know, better part of, you know, 15, 20 years now. I mean, even back to the Hill Denson days. I mean, you know, but, you know, Southern Miss done a good job. And so I commend Chris Lemonis for being willing, rather than play the game in Pearl, hey, let's go out there and play these guys at their place. And, you know, we'll see how things go. We'll do a home and home with them. And that's good for everybody's RPI. And just so you guys are aware, Southern Miss will play four games this weekend, weather permitting. I don't know if you're aware of that. And so the thing that I think about is what does that do to your pitching staff for Tuesday? Now, granted, they're playing Lafayette. I don't know if you know a whole lot about Lafayette. You know, not Louisiana Lafayette, but Lafayette Leopards. You know, and so that's a lot of innings to cover when you got to turn around and play an SEC team on Tuesday. That's just kind of something to watch. Now, they may decide due to weather. I don't know what their circumstances look like or the forecast down there. They may elect to scratch one of those games, but that's 36 innings that your pitching staff has to cover, and then you get a day off on Monday and turn right back around and play a Mississippi State team that will have 2 days of rest out of three before they come in there. And so that's just, you know, again, the dynamic of the schedule and how things kind of, you know, fold out. But let me prepare you, too. That Missouri State team that's coming in here, they're not Evansville. And they're not Mount St. Mary's. And even though Evansville got hot late, this Missouri State team can absolutely swing it. And so, I mean, if we don't go in there and pitch it well, I don't know how well they're going to pitch it, but Missouri State's picked to win their league. And so that's going to be a quality kind of G5 opponent for us and a team that we're going to be a big fan of after we win because we're going to need them to help us RPI-wise. But it's kind of interesting with them, too. Like they're traveling to Sam Houston the first weekend of the year. They'll be in Huntsville, Texas for three, and then they go to Central Arkansas, and then they head here. You know, so it's going to be kind of a never-ending road trip because after they play us, they go to Oral Roberts, and then finally they're home against Louisiana Monroe. So it's going to be this kind of us-against-the-world mentality as they open up the season. Eight straight road games, and that's eight straight days of, you know, baseball and being away from the people you care about and that sort of stuff, and it's all kind of in quick succession there, too. You know, you got Sam Houston through Sunday, then you're at Central Arkansas on Tuesday. I don't know when they come in, and maybe they go up and come back. I don't know. You know, that's just kind of something to look at, too. Just kind of the way that the structure of the schedule is composed, that's interesting. And, of course, then that Tuesday we have Troy come in. And so we have got to get off to a good start. And it all starts with the Manhattan Jaspers. And, again, we'll talk more at length about them on Friday. But I am optimistic about our team. There are no perfect lineups. There has never been a perfect lineup in the history of Mississippi State. And I would say that 1989 lineup is probably the closest thing that we've ever had, you know, to a perfect lineup. And that team would have been considered the number one seed in the NCAA tournament that year. We were the best team in America. And then things didn't work out for us. You know, it's all said and done. It's kind of how life works at times. But, you know, there are always going to be, you know, some points in the lineup you look at and say, well, you know, the way this thing stacks up, it could be a tough inning for us. I think the composition of this lineup and the depth of this team, there is a lot more length in this lineup. A lot more length. And I go back to think about, you know, as great as 2021 was, there are some times that I look back and I think to myself, how did we win this? You know, we weren't an elite offensive team. We set a national record for strikeouts, but we weren't exactly a dominant pitching team. You know, it's not like we had, you know, back in 16, you know, you had Dakota and Austin as your Friday and Saturday guy, and Pilk went on Sundays. And that was an outstanding pitching rotation because you had a true bona fide Friday night guy. But, you know, I go back and look. Guys, we had 278 that year as a team. And you may have forgotten, we only had two regulars hit above 300. That's T.A. and Rowdy. And, of course, T.A. with a good tournament, you know. Rowdy, of course, played well two down the stretch. But, you know, you only had two guys of the starting nine that hit above 300. And Logan Tanner was there at 287, and DeBrule at 278. But, you know, this was not one of those teams you looked at and said, you know, they just absolutely strike fear in your hearts. We had 75 home runs that year. LT led us with 15. Maybe you've forgotten. You know, Luke had 10. Cam James had 12. You know, if we get five double-digit home run guys this year, and I think there's a possibility of that happening, it's going to be a great year. But it's all about being in the right position when you get hot. And again, kind of looking back at the pitching staff, you know, we talked about, we basically did it with 1.5 pitchers. Will Bednar goes 9-1 that year with a 3.12 ERA. Of course, some things kind of fell apart late for C-Mac, but he goes 6-6 that year with a 5.23. Didn't have a great postseason. He was sick the whole time he was in Omaha. That's something that most of our fans don't know. You know, Landon Sims, of course, was elite, 5-0 with a 1.44 ERA. Cade Smith didn't do a lot in SEC play, but he had 10 appearances at a 2.40 ERA. Parker Stinnett, it's kind of crazy looking back at this when considering how many walks he had that year. But 2.41 ERA and a 1-0 in 17 appearances. You know, we just kind of pieced this thing together. And I think the depth on this pitching staff rivals that one, except we don't have, you know, the bona fide Friday night guy. And let's be honest about that. Going into the season, we thought that was going to be Christian McLeod. We thought Bednar would be a good weekend guy. We weren't exactly sure, you know, where he would be, even though he kind of emerged in 20. You know, we were out there at Long Beach State, if you remember, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this Bednar kid's pretty good, you know, and then, of course, the season ends. But, you know, you go back and look at the he made four appearances in 2020 with a 1.76 ERA. No record, but a 1.76 ERA. And, you know, really went out there and kind of demonstrated himself, 23 Ks against just six walks. And that was just in four games in 2020. And so we felt like, you know, the raw materials were there, but little did we know that he'd be a first-round draft pick in 2021. So, you know, we'll see how things go. Am I projecting State to win an AFL championship? No, I'm not. But I do think this team is capable of getting to Omaha. But the first steps towards Omaha, we'll take two of them on Friday against Manhattan. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. If you're bringing a large group to town, and we encourage you to do that because we want you to spend more time together. We don't want you to get to the end of your life saying, I wish that I would have packed the car more and spent more time with the people that I care the most about. Be the linchpin in your family and friend group when you do the planning. Go ahead and Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page comes up and you can peruse the fine amenities available to you and your guest. Also, some booking options come up. Airbnb, VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10. Gets 10% off your stay. Just by listening to the show, you're saving some money. I've stayed there. We had a great time. You have the full-service kitchen. You have the wet bar. I didn't partake in that. You have the great back porch area, the fire pit area. We did use that a lot. So rather than go out and get five or six hotel rooms, just get everybody under one roof because it's not just getting together. It's kind of staying together, right? Having those moments where you just kind of sit around doing nothing and just spend time getting caught up on each other's lives. Whether it's a work group, a friend group, a family group, maybe a baby shower group, 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, Come enjoy all your favorite things about Starkville and stay in the premier place to stay. Just, you know, again, 5 minutes away, right there past the Highlands, neatly kind of tucked away where you can have some peace and quiet. Yeah. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle area. Okay, before we get together again, the Mississippi State ladies will travel to Vanderbilt, trying to kind of get back on track here. The ladies currently 17-8, 4-7 in conference play, 4-5 in true road games. And, you know, of course, we lose that game to Alabama. It was not entertaining at all. Got punched in the mouth and, you know, just couldn't recover. We didn't quit. I give us credit for that. We absolutely did not quit in that ball game. We continued to fight. Just didn't have enough bullets in the gun to pull off the comeback. But, you know, Vanderbilt, it's an important game for us. They're a team that, you know, has maybe had a bit of a resurgence here, you know. You know, I don't know if you look at it and say, you know, that, hey, they're a great team, but they're certainly a quality opponent. We're going to have to bring our best effort to go up there and win a ball game. They're 18-6 and 5-5 in conference. They've lost two games in a row, but they are 12-2 there in Memorial Gymnasium. Kind of looking back as how it all kind of came to be. You know, they open up with big wins over Lipscomb, Austin Peay. They get South Florida on the road in Tampa by 13. That's a quality win. They get Butler, Hampton, and they blast Samford, as you'd expect. And then a Power 5 win out there in the, I'm going to say this, but I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong, Acrisure Arena. They beat Arizona and then lose to Michigan State by 8. So a split against Power 5 opponents on a neutral floor in one of these preseason events. They blast Appalachian State in the SEC-ACC Challenge. They go to Miami, a team that came to Mississippi State last year and beat us up pretty good without Jessica Carter. And they beat Miami by 18 down there. They blast Evansville. They go to Dayton, win there, destroy West Georgia, and, of course, Alabama A&M. Then we get an SEC play. And they get Georgia. And they put up 108 against Georgia. Not a great Georgia team, but anytime that you're getting a C note against an SEC opponent, that's a significant development. They host Kentucky and then get beat there 96-68. Go to Ole Miss, get beat 87-59. So it's like they're kind of coming back to earth. You travel to LSU, competitive ball game. They lose just by 6, but again, Kim Mulkey and the Tigers win. Another big win for them. They get Tennessee and Nashville and beat them by 1. So that ends a 3-game losing streak. They host Arkansas, put up 101 points against them. This clearly is a team that gets out and runs when they want to. They go to Alabama. They beat Alabama, a team that just beat Mississippi State, 66-64. Pretty incredible. They go to Florida, not a great Florida team, beat them by 13. They lose to Ole Miss 76-61, and they lose to Texas 87-66. And so they enter the game on a 2-game losing streak. Will host us 8 p.m. tip Thursday night there in Memorial. And this is a game that we absolutely need to get, as you guys are well aware. If we have any hopes of making the tournament, we got to start winning some games. And this is a team, in many respects, kind of one of our contemporaries, comparable records for sure. And so let's take a quick look here kind of at the stats, kind of who's standing out for them and kind of what they've done as a team in our final moments here together. I remember a time we've taken some good teams to Vanderbilt, even when they have just been okay, and it's been a very competitive, you know, ball game. Certainly has been. But, again, this is a team that has, you know, gotten better in recent years. And this is probably one of the better teams they've had, you know, in recent years. If we can get these stats to come out, there they go. All right, averaging 84.5 points a game, just giving up 65. Now, some of that's a quality of competition, but in non-conference play, they did play some teams that are capable of winning some games. So they're outscoring teams by just over 19 points a game. Shooting at a pretty good clip, right at 46% from the field, 32, almost 33% from beyond the arc. They're a team that hasn't really been susceptible to the three ball, only allowing about 30%, only 138 made threes against Vanderbilt. So they get out and defend the perimeter. Shoot the free throws pretty good, about 78%. Out-rebounding opponents by about 4 per game, They do play some team basketball, 16.6 assists per game. And they force a lot of turnovers. Opponents, 514 turnovers. So 7.5 more created than surrendered by Vanderbilt. They only turn it over about 14 times, per game. That's 7 extra possessions. That matters. They also force a lot of steals, almost 300, right at 12.5 a game. Opponents have only stolen it 168 times, right at 7. 70 blocks against 71, so that's pretty much even there. But we dig a little bit deeper here into the individual numbers. Let's see here. It's Michaela Blakes leading the charge at 22.1 points per game, and then Camille Pierre with 21.2. Kind of a two-woman wrecking crew there. Ayanna Moore also pitches in a Baker's dozen and a half. And from there, it's mainly single-digit scorers, but they do play a little bit deeper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Looks like they go about 8 women deep. So they're rotating a lot, staying fresh. Rebounding has been a big part of the game for Camille Pierre. 231 boards on the year. That is a substantial number. Jordan Oliver, not necessarily a great scorer, but second on the team with 116 rebounds. So we're going to have to do a good job in the post. There's no question about it. We're going to have to do a good job when there is a defensive rebound and opportunity to deny them that extra possession. But very interesting team. And it's so interesting, too, when you get outside of the scoring statistic, you look at all the other stuff, the assists, the steals, the turnovers, it's pretty even. It's pretty evenly distributed throughout the roster. But, Camille Pierre averaging, a double-double, 10 boards a game, 21.2 points. And so, Medina Okot's going to have to play a good game for us. There's no question about it. But it's going to be a war down low for sure. And a team that certainly does a good job of, getting the shot that they want. But, this is a game that we're going to have to win. And you begin to kind of ask yourself, it's like, hey, we didn't make tournament last year. What happens if we don't make it this year? I haven't given up on this team or this coaching staff. And you start thinking about, can you get to 20 wins and possibly finish in the top half of this league? Is that enough? I think maybe it will be. And I think when you begin to work through kind of what's left, the games are there for State to make the move. You've only got five games left, and this Vanderbilt game may be the most difficult outside of the Texas game. And so when you think about what's left, you should win at Florida. Good chance to win at home against Texas A&M, and you go to Auburn, who has not been very good. So let's say you go 3-2 in the final five. Well, that gets you to 20 wins, makes you 20-13. And then you'll get you 7 wins in the conference. 7-9, is that going to be enough? So you're almost 500 and you've got 20 wins in one of the better conferences in America. Probably put yourself in a position where you need to win a game in Greenville in the tournament. And so it's not over. And I know it's so easy to get down on the team, but this is a team that has some ability. And when they play to their full potential, they're capable of some very good things. So hopefully you go out there, if you find a way to win at Vanderbilt, and I'm not expecting that. I'm just going to tell you that. I'm not expecting a win. But if you do, the margin for error is a lot greater down the stretch. Because, again, I think there are 3 very winnable games. I don't think we'll do a good job against Texas. I think it's a terrible matchup. So I'm kind of already penciling that in as a loss. I'm sure we'll go out and play hard. But a lot of these players don't have any connection to Vic Schaefer. Right, I mean, so it's not like it's an emotional game for them. It may be an emotional game for him and maybe for Sam Purcell, but not really for the players themselves. But, I think this team will win probably 3 more games. And, again, if you upset Vanderbilt, that gets you 4. So 20 maybe gets you in. I think 21 definitely gets you in. But we're going to have to play better than we have played at times as of late. So let's, again, try to remain optimistic. If you hadn't done so, go to DirtyNibbleBook.com, and you can get all of my sports titles there. That's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, and Every Bulldog Needs Dog Pile. Matter of fact, I ran into Tanner Allen the other day, and he told me that every time he reads it, he can't finish it because he ends up in tears because it means so much to him. And I think that says a lot about what we mean to him because we know what he means to us. And, of course, the dude, somebody bought him a copy of the dude, and he's been enjoying that too. So be like T.A. You know, Valentine's Day is coming up, and my books are all over the place. And so if you can't find one, you can order one online at dutynoblebook.com. And even if it's not there by Valentine's Day, you can let them know, you know, hey, your book's on the way. You know, your signed, personalized copy's on the way. Or you can swing through and pick up a book when you're in Starkville. Yeah. True story. But again, I expect to be signing somewhere Saturday. I know the weather may not be ideal, but I will likely be at Campus Bookmart on Saturday. And many of you will be spending the weekend in Starkville for baseball, so you'll have opportunity to come out and say hello. Wouldn't that be nice, right? Sure. Jeanspage.com, come be a part of our band of merry maroon misfits over there. You know, nobody covers Mississippi State like we do, especially during baseball season. Which is why we get a one-on-one interview with Steven Rosen, you know, the head coach from Manhattan, and very happy to get that, and very happy to provide that for our subscribers. That's the kind of content you can expect for us over at jeanspage.com. But listen, baseball season's nearly here. We'll be back on Friday, hopefully recapping an upset win over Vanderbilt and women's basketball, and getting ready for a very important weekend. Mississippi State men's basketball is the men head to Oxford to take on Ole Miss. And we keep talking about that signature win. We were lacking that one. How great would it be to sweep those guys this year, especially when they're having a better year than us? And I never, ever discount anything in these rivalry games. You never know what's going to happen. But this is a very desperate Mississippi State team going to be playing against an Ole Miss team that's playing pretty well right now. So it would be an upset for us to go in there, not just because of the rankings, but just because of the trajectory of these teams right now. But you win that game, it changes a lot for Mississippi State. We're going to preview that game on Friday, and we look forward to having you all at Duty Noble Field Friday and Sunday. So come be a part of that. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/RedCircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.